Looking back with me for the next 60 minutes are Steve Marriott, Ronnie Lane, Kenny Jones and Ian McLagan.
Imagine what a thrill. I mean, we were doing exactly what we wanted to do. We were having more fun than we should legally have been having. And we spent, I think it was up almost a year. And I like to go in the studio every day, which is how I remember it. Get up, eat and go to the studio and be there until we just didn't want to be there any longer. We were there all night, you know. Days turned into weeks, into months. Fun, 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 fun.
The Small Faces were formed in 1965, inspired by the arrival of American soul music, and in particular by those Made in Memphis recordings that were driven along by the rhythm section of Booker T and the MGs, whose organ-based lineup they emulated. Their first hit, What You Gonna Do About It, lifted the riff from Solomon Burke's Everybody Needs Somebody to Love. But the failure of the follow-up, I Got Mine, sidetracked them into a succession of pop singles. Through 1966 and 1967, the Small Faces were in the top 20 more weeks than they were out of it. But hits didn't amount to job satisfaction, especially when the rest of reality was a non-stop UK tour, turning out those hits night after night in front of a screaming, unhearing teen audience. But things got better when they joined Immediate, a management company, an independent record label, set up by the Rolling Stones manager, Andrew Oldham. Here's Steve Marriott.
We were in a very funny position where our management was also the record company. So whereas before you'd have the record company, an agent and a manager, and they'd all kind of work against each other in some ways. You know, you had a schedule to go in the studio, and then the agent wanted you on the road for so much, the manager wanted you to do interviews. So with this, at least, they were more interested, being a record company, in making records. I mean, the gig side of it, they weren't too concerned about whatsoever. They just wanted the publishing and the records, mainly, because that's where the dough was for them. This one, it took about a year, remember that? And it was all different studios in between playing. And half of it was written on logs. I remember we took a boat out. And we were out for about, I don't know, 3 days, 4 days, because we had all these nice tracks with no words. So we went out and just wrote the words. And I remember me and Ronnie were sat on some sort of fallen logs, and it was coming out of us, so we wrote down on the stripped bark.
Lyrics written on logs, a boat trip up the Thames. Here's Ian McLagan again, and Ronnie Lane.
Oh, the old boat trip up the river.
Yeah, boat trip down the River Thames.
Scum of the river!
That's what that bloke called me. The reverse gear went or something.
Scum of the river.
So I had to plough into another boat, and this guy's there with his captain's hat and blazer and white slacks.
I couldn't help but agree.
Actually, yeah, because a lot of these... Side 2, right, Happenstan and Hungry Intruder... A lot of those came together then, didn't they, really?
Yeah.
We weren't on the road at that time. We had unlimited studio time. You know, I mean, that was the one great thing about Immediate Records, Andrew Oldham, was that he just let us create, you know?
Yeah.
We did some at Pi. The Ogden's Nut Gone Flake, the instrumental, the tape got lost, and we'd done a good tape, so we went to... For some reason, we couldn't get into Olympic. We went to Pi and recorded it again. I think it was Pi. And then, I don't know, it wasn't as good. Then we found the tape, and then something happened. It was, the tape got stretched. Do you remember? And Glyn had to edit a chunk out or whatever, put a bit in. I don't know. It took us some weeks.
Ogden's Nut Gone Flame was an instrumental version of I Got Mine. It was a second Small Faces single, which bombed, you know. And it's basically the track re-recorded of it and kept as an instrumental. And I know there's just something about a wah-wah on it. It was a very primitive type of wah-wah on the piano. I sat upstairs I didn't play on the track, it was just piano, bass and drums. And I had a little sort of very lethal looking zinc box, you know what I mean, with a great big brown knob on it. And I was sort of wowing along with Max playing, so he'd hit a chord like ding and it'd go do wang, you know.
Ogden's Nut Gone Flake. Kenny Jones.
Ogden's Nut Gone Flake. Looking at this, I realise that I contributed to the songwriting of this. Probably because it has no lyrics. It was a great fun track to do because it was quite a dynamic, in its day, instrumental, you know, and there was lots of... I had a great big 26-inch cymbal that goes all over it, you know, which is wonderful. And there was nice drum breaks, and I was very fortunate that we used Glyn Johns as an engineer, because one of his best things was drum sounds as well, and it was virtually there, you know. I mean, he literally recorded the sound of my drum kit in the studio. I mean, whatever he listened to in the room, we got on tape, which was great, because that was me, you know. Apart from using the odd echo and the odd reverb sort of gimmick here and there, I was always very excited to listen to a tape after we've laid one down, walking back through into the control room, because, I mean, I knew it was always going to sound great, and I was so thrilled to bits with myself because Glyn had managed to capture the performance and the drum sound, so... I take my hat to Glyn.
I know that I'm happy just to be with you. I know that you're loving you the way I do. I know that there's every way I need you. I know that you're dressing the afterglow of you. All around me, everywhere. Love has come to touch my soul with someone who really cares. No one can deny us. People who once passed me by will turn their a feeling that I could not see or touch or try to hide. My love is in and around you. Hey, I bless the day that I found you. So
Afterglow, well, it's just a silly love song, isn't it? You know, it's a sort of all or nothing-ish sort of. I mean, I'm amazed how popular that song is with sort of small faces people. You know, they do tend to like that one. It's all right. There's another one written for one of your girlfriends. To me, it's just I get quite embarrassed about some of the words I wrote then. You know what I mean? Because they were always for some watery tart or another. You know. So, sort of embarrassing. Maybe that's what it is, a bit of embarrassment. But it's a lovely track. It's a shame about the words.
Like the Small Faces' previous half-dozen hit singles, Afterglow is credited to Marriott and Lane. But since it turns out that many of the Lennon-McCartney compositions on which the Beatles' career was built were written separately, does that co-writing credit mean that Steve and Ronnie actually sat down in the same room to write their songs?
Sometimes, not as much as we wrote apart, you know. Sometimes. The Fly song on here, The Hungry Intruder, that's Ronnie. You know, but it's the ideas you put into it, whereas Mad John's me. You know, I mean, you can go through them like that and say this. There are obviously some, like Happy Days Toy Town was all three of us. You know, so that, it never worked that way where it's got Marriott Lane. I'm sure any two writers will tell you the same. You see, the sort of collaboration of there's someone in the room with you. You know, it might be pouring out of Ronnie or it might be pouring out of me, but if there's someone there to sort of egg you on, stem the flow and give you other little tangents to go on. And that to me is when you work together on something. But usually it's you've got a finished article and it's just given to the rest of the band to turn round, to give back what they think it should be. You know, like you've got the chord sequence, you've got the arrangement, now do something with it. You know, and Ronnie would say, this is the way it goes, and we'd do that. Or I'd say, this is the way it goes, and we'd do that. Or Mac always had more definite ideas, I think, than me and Ronnie had come with exactly how we wanted it to go, but we didn't mind which way it was turned. You know, whereas when Mac wrote a song, because he didn't write very much at that time, you know, it was just one or two, but they were definitely his own, and he definitely had a definite idea on how he wanted them.
Before we'll meet again, when we can think of long ago and world.
Long Ago and Worlds Apart was my attempt. I don't know what to make of it, really.
No,
it was a waffling song.
No, did we, mate?
One of my early renditions. You know, I tried to write, but never really got it together. But then on this record, see, I sort of chipped in little bits and pieces here and there, and the lads didn't throw me out of the band, so I just carried on doing it, really.
Yeah.
I found an easy tuning on the guitar, and just found the chords. I don't know what I was singing about. I have no memory of it. Here I am sitting. I don't know what the words are about. I just wanted to write something, so put it together. Long Ago and Worlds Apart, I suppose. I'd seen some girl and thought, gosh, I seem to know you from a long time ago, you know, a bit mystical. Rainy, right?
Then Rainy, the Docker's Delight.
The Docker's Delight.
Rainy, the Docker's Delight. A ship's in every night. Waiting for a stoker from the coast of Kuala Lumpur. That was it.
And was there a real Rainy?
Oh, Rainy Tungate, her name was. He's down Strone Road in Manor Park. And that's who she was, and she did have a kid of every size and colour, you know. It's a great old character, though. Taught me everything I needed to know. Everything my mother hit me for, she taught me.
Stuck together, that one.
Just trying to find something a bit humorous, I suppose. People like Rod Stewart, Ronnie Wood, they loved this record. I mean, they told us when they joined the band that they used to listen to this all the time. And this was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't serious in any kind of way, you know. It was a lot of fun. It's great that they were serious musicians, you know, and they loved it. Song of a Baker. What the hell is Song of a Baker about, Ronnie? I always thought it was Son of a Baker. Sorry. I was in the wrong band, I think.
I suppose it's just, it's about how hard you want to work if you're hungry, man. The Song of a Baker. If you're hungry, then you learn to become a baker. I suppose. It's a bit stupid, really, but I got the idea from a Sufi book, which is kind of a mystical book. Yeah, so that's Song of a Baker. Next!
And so
Song of a Baker. Our classic album is The Small Faces' Ogden's Nut Gone Flake, and the next track is Lazy Sunday.
Was it all Steve, or pretty much mostly Steve? I mean, I know the idea, because he was living in this apartment flat in Chiswick, and he had dogs. They used to shit all over the balcony.
Cats,
the place stunk on the carpet. He rented this beautiful apartment, two-story apartment.
Stunk to high hell. Like,
but it had beautiful carpets and paintings and furniture, and it was all wrecked. I mean, he had someone paint Thor all over the wall, like Thor from Marvel Comics. The whole wall was Thor. Jesus, and it stunk. You could smell the place before you got in there.
So then
it was really a pleasure to go round and see him.
Then he went to the bog and he wrote...
Yeah, because the neighbours used to complain.
In the toilet, he sat there and he went, wouldn't it be nice to get on with me neighbours? Because they make it very clear they got no room for ravers, you know?
In fact, when we... That's right, I remember now, when we started to do it, it wasn't as crazy. It was more... wouldn't it be nice to get on with me neighbours? But as we started playing it, we all took the piss out of it. And so it ended up as, wouldn't it be nice to get on with me neighbours?
Wouldn't it be nice to get on with me neighbours? But they make it very clear they've got no room for ravers.
Of the album in April 1968, Lazy Sunday rose to number 2 in the charts, only kept from the top by the biggest selling single of the year, Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World. Yet Mac had been quoted as saying it wouldn't sell, and Steve hadn't wanted it out either.
I thought that. I didn't want that at all. Me, I had a right go about it. We found out about it in Italy. We got a call saying Andrew had released it, and I rang him up and went mad. I said, no, don't do that. You know, it's supposed to be just a little one-off thing. I didn't want that to be our sort of theme song, which it became, that in Ichiku Park and stuff, you know. To us, it was more of a giggle, that. It wasn't, we had other stuff that we were sort of more chuffed with, like, you know. But there you go.
Lazy Sunday closes the first side of the album. The songs on side two are linked by a story.
We just thought it would be like a positive way of finishing the album, you know what I mean? Just link them all up and then bang, you've got one side. The story was about...
mystical journey,
I suppose.
It?
Yeah, it's kind of a mystical journey. It's this kid who kind of falls in love with the moon, and all of a sudden he observed the moon being eaten away by time. You know, the way they go, they wax and wane, don't they? And of course, when it's gone, he's sort of like all down. And then the thing is that all of a sudden, bush, it comes back again. You know what I mean? Like life itself, man. And there's something, I thought that was something to pick up on, really. Because, you know, you can often get really brought down by something. And you just... he's just being stupidly impatient, usually, or something, you know?
Once they'd come up with this concept, they had to find someone to narrate the links.
We'd asked Spike Milligan to do it, originally, but, you know, he turned us down. And we thought, well, all right, then, well, perhaps we won't link them together. It's a bit of a knockback, because we all like Spike's humour and what have you. And I think there was a honey advert that was going about at the time for some brand of honey, and it was Stanley Unwin. And we thought, yeah, that's a, if you'd do it, that'd be great.
Remember the day he came down the studio, though, Stanley Unwin?
Oh, yeah.
God, he's so funny. But he spent a day with us in the studio while we were doing, I don't know, we were recording some of the stuff. And he said, because we told him the idea that we wanted him to narrate in some way, to do some links between the songs. And but he came down and spent a day just hanging around. He used the way we spoke, you know, as reference. He was making notes the whole time, you know. And then he started talking like us. It was so funny. But it wasn't... I think he came down the second time. He'd worked on it, you know. And then he went out and then just sort of did it, just tried a few things, but...
It must have been quite an experience for him, really. Yeah. You know, I mean, who else gets a chance like that, man? Sort of bunch of little kids sort of like come and drag you in, sort of like... talk over their album.
Are you all sitting comfortable, two square on your body? Then I'll begin.
You know, we got Mac to play some silly harp on for the beginning of The Other Side. A great big harp that was left in Pye Studios, and he went along and sort of played it with his chin, did some silly notes, and that had to go somewhere too. So we put that at the beginning of the next side. It's true, none of this was really that thought out.
Once upon a time in a land of dreams, where the sky was silky soft and full of coloured dreams, deep inside a rainbow lived happiness man, in a small Victoriana chalabang. Evening will be here quite soon. Stan could sit and watch the moon, watching as the white light slowly makes the night bright, all skipping by.
Written it on keyboard, like da 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 dee dee dee. It was all very weird for me. You know, where do these things keep coming from? And put it together with a few chords, and that's what happened to that. It's a nice track, very moody, very, very moody little chords. Nice, funny little words and all. But there's a humour in there too, where you've got the da-dee-dee-dee and all that, you know, a bit of Russian whip-cracking going on. Conjures up a bit of snow and gloom.
On Rollin' Over, which follows Happiness Stan, the Small Faces sound was fleshed out by a brass section.
I think it was a guy called Eddie Thornton, yeah, who was with Georgie Fame at that time. Eddie Thornton, and we took him on the road for a while as well. He had a little section, and it was great. I'll never forget that. We did a little tour, and to play with brass was just wonderful. I mean, I felt like I was in a band, you know. I felt really professional, you know. It's great fun.
Now, of course, like all real life experience story, this also begins once a polytito. And Happiness Stan, whose life evolved the ephemeral colour dreamy most, had his pure existence and this being a deep jaw of the multicolour of the rainbold. Oh, yes, his home's a Victoriana Sharabold. This is a four-wheel philolop out the back grove. Now, as Eve does his deep approachy, his eye on the moon. All time, sometime, deep joy of a full moon scintillating dangly in the heavenly bode. But now only half. Oh, blow your cool, man, he do this deep thought, cause. What is the folly of this half disappearing of the moony most? And as the light did a scintillating change through timely most, stop it still, and he did a deep thorcus. What? Absolutely smash and flake it he was. So, gathering all behind in the hintermost, he ploddy forward into the deep thunder mould of the complicated foray to sort this one out, matey. Where at, Mandy Thorcus? Where at, man? Oh, dear.
Rolling Over, that was called for ages, that was called a bun in the oven, because we just didn't know what to call that. And I think that was one of the ones that later got words to fit in with the ones that we already were trying to put in some semblance of order. They used to like doing that on stage, nice live one. It was a live track, you know, it's just as we were playing. See, this is the trouble, you get stuff like Lazy Sunday being a hit in Australia or something, or Ichiku Park, and you go there and you perform, and they expect this... every song to be like that. In fact, it's probably the one you didn't do, and you did all sort of rolling over type stuff, you know. Very sort of loud and metallic and brash. And that's really what we were like on stage, you know. It's more like a brash rhythm section, organ-based rhythm section. You know, to play the others on stage would have been very difficult at that time because the technology that we were using in the studio wasn't there for the stage. So it was a sort of a... terrible sort of quandary to be in because we couldn't really take it on the road, you know. But we could have done, we've all said in retrospect we should have done, but maybe it was best left like it is, and we might have done it an injustice by trying to do it live. It's a very nice, technically recorded album.
Now, after a little lapse of time, Stan became deep hungry in his tumload. Oh, after all, he struggly triddly house several mile load, and anyway would suffer under this. So suddenly he did deep focus, out with his lunchy bag, just about to do a little nib load of his mincy meaty when...
Hungry Intruder was The Fly. I was going to say, remember the strings we had? We had these, the old fogies. I mean, these were the days before synthesizers. If you wanted strings, you had to get human beings.
It was a bit adventurous for us then, you know, because we didn't have a George Martin or nothing, you know, and used to work them out on the Mellotron and then get a guy that used to work for Immediate to come around and transpose it to music, because, you know, none of us could actually write music, but we knew what we wanted. Very nice track, that. Very nice. Ronnie's Little Baby, and it's great stuff. We made it fit into the story, I think, in the end. Yeah. We thought, well, a little fly, OK, it can grow bigger and it can take him away on a little journey somewhere, and hence you got the journey, you know. But that's all right as well. That's very funny. It's like Firework Night, isn't it? Whenever I hear that, which hasn't been for a while, but I always think of Firework Night. Like, shh, and all that, you know. Fireworks going off. And very funny little commentaries in there, though. That's what makes it... Stanley, I'm in a fly tickling with his whiskers and his eardrobes and all that.
Now, the fly was overwhelmed with this deep generosity of Stanley's give of the foodage, because all life lies stuff of a foodage. He looked at Stan and said, is there anything I can reciprocate or do in the joy of return for your generosity for giving me food and stuff, eh? Stan, I'm looking for the other half of the moon and dangly. This is my folly. Show me where the missing half of that moon. I don't know, said the fly returly, but I know someone who know if only I were big enough to transport him most. I'd take it there myself, I would do this, and Stan, having the possessive power of the magic hold, stand it over, roll it up the sleeve, wavely hand, hovery, 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 and utter these magic words, if all the flies were one fly, what a great, enormous fly philolloper that would bold. Oh, and there, incredible buzz. Oh, dear, hovery, hovery. Now the fly recoiled with these wordage. Not only will I transport them there, but I'll sing it a deep joy of a song load in your eardrobes. That I will do.
The journey, well, we just got to a point where we had to take a journey, really. Like, the fly...
The hungry intruder.
Had to fly off, I suppose, you know. And that would mean a journey, and so therefore kind of sounded a bit like a journey. We hoped it did, but now that I listen to it, it doesn't really sound like a journey at all. It sounds like a bunch of hogsbush.
I swear, I can't even remember how it goes. I don't even know. Was I ever there? I don't seem to remember. I remember the title. I remember the tune. Sing me a bit. Go on. Oh, yeah. Hogswash, like you said.
Yesterday, the sun is surely just a thought away. Where visions that men fail to put to words to tell, and the music that they try but cannot play.
It's very odd, isn't it? I think I played bass on that and Ronnie played guitar on that, if I'm not mistaken, because it's one of Ronnie's little... That first part of the song was another one of Ronnie's bits, you know. And I think we just sort of went crazy on the last bit. Fader crazy, you know, we... all pressing faders like mad. Yeah. Mad John is the next one. I love that. I think it's great. It's a good track. It's, could do that any time. Nice words, pleased with them. You know, that was, again, that sort of reading books like Lobsang Rampur and The Prophet and all that, you know, and getting something out of it and realising there are these characters about, you know, that people were scared of through ignorance. So that's what that was about.
And so, C.T. Comfortable, on the back of this enormous buzzy most of the fly, they took it off like an escape velocity of the rocket floating into orbit. Now, after floating high up, over the mountain, through the deep valley of that, for 7 whole long days, they did a very soft and flat belly landing, if I may put it this way. Where they landed? A tranquil beauty spotted before a deep thunder mould of a foray. Like Orpheus in the undergrowth, there it was. And the fly said it, I must leave you here. And he pointed here with his sort of fly-type thing, gold, if it was all feathery, and said, Mad John, mark the words. He liveth in a cave there in this far deep foray, and he will transport for you and find it not only the moon itself which you look at, but the philosophy of life to itself. And Stan had a mutual joy for this, and reach up and cuddly most of this big fly, and very hard to embrace it and most kissy, and the fly tickling with his whiskers in his eardrome. And off he went.
An old man that lived in the greenwood. Nobody knew him or what he had done. But mothers would say to their children, beware of Mad John. John would sing with the birds in the morning, laugh with the wind in the cold hand of night. But people from behind their curtains said he's not quite right. John had it sussed. He was living the life of a tramp. Yes, his bed was the cold and the damp, but the sun was his friend. He was free. So here was a wise one who loved all the haters. He loved them so much that their hate turned to fear. And shaking from behind their curtains, the loved ones would hear.
So Stan walketh towards the cave, and in his mind, mark your word, Mad John. Deep focus on this, all a trembload, looking into the dark and peering into the back grove of black in there. And then appeared Mad John, in fine, fine, foldy silken robes, all whitely hair, scintillating beard and dangling. Well, the beard must have been 3 to 4 years old to grow it and grow it all night load. What? And he was glowing with a friendly light, oh dear, joy, and a voice full of a cockney, all joy of life and livid emanate from the cockload of his heartstrings. Call to see you, man. What's been your hang-up, man? I waiting 7 whole days for you. Not still worried about this since late moon and dangly, huh? Stan, yes, that's why I sorting you out here, and trittly-trittly how on the back of this fly who told me. And John linked arms with him, and walking out stepper by stepper, and he pointed with a cockney forefinger gold. There, up in the heavenly bode. What? Stan realised, now, which it struck him like a smacker o' blurdy, which coming out turn he never thought us before. As the sun rises in the early mordy, so the recoil of the moon on the eve. Ah, and he thought. Now, the fly had something extra special you thought us to say to me, if you wold. And John looked at him, and attractness earnestly of his eyeballs, straight nose to nose and eye to eye bold for it. Of course, I nearly forgot it. Just you listen.
Mad John. When Ogden's came out in 1968, there was almost as much talk about the circular sleeve, designed to look like a tobacco tin, as what was inside.
The pound box was actually the bottom of a tin. I remember that. I think that was my idea, but the rest of it was everybody else's ideas. Ogden sent us all their tobacco labels, and we went through the actual, every single one, right from the, when the company first started, and they had an oblong tobacco tin, a rectangular. It was called Ogden's Nut Brown Flake, Celebrate Flake, and the artist we used, whose name I don't even know, just put gone instead of brown.
Because we had a saying in those days that whenever we was feeling a little bit sort of, you know, inebriated, our nuts would go.
The closing track on our classic album is Happy Days Toy Town.
Oh, Happy Days Toy Town. That was Mac's song, really. He had some ideas of that in the title. Very pleased with that. That was great. It was fun to sing, fun to play. Great stuff. Because most of these were done live anyway, you know, and you just overdub a couple of things like a harpsichord or another guitar, whatever. And it sort of tied the end in because we couldn't work out how to come out of it. Once we got into it, he says, well, now what happens? He's right, he's found the geezer tells you about the moon. Then what happens? So, party is what happens.
Life is just a bowl of old bread. You wake up every morning and it's there. So live as only you can.
It's all about, enjoy it.
Cause ever since you saw it, there ain't no one can take it away. So life is just a bowl of old bread.
Very true.
What you say has made it very clear. So be sure I'll live as best as I can.
But how can I remember to
keep it all together. Then half the moon is taken away. I've got the fancy feet. If you can laugh and see, I give me that happy days toy town newspaper smile. We'll clap twice, lean back, twist for a while. Well, when you're untogether and feeling out of tune, I sing this special song with me. Don't worry about the moon, looks after itself. We'll clap twice, lean back, we'll twist for a while.
Yes. Well, now you've got the hang of it, there's nothing you can't do with it.
Well, if you're very true to it, you can't go wrong.
All together.
Give us those happy days, toys, and you make a smile. We'll clap twice, lean back, we'll twist for a while.
So remember the very special words. Happy Day Lung, Toilet Town newspaper reader in Chuckley Smiler. They all had a lovely turnout. Gnomes Kane, Huckleberry Pickle Tickle My Fingold, but Boy Blue left his horn stuffing under the settee and brought his mellotron and freaked them all out. Oh, what a mind blast. Jackie Jill, Knees Up Mother Brody. Oh, what a joy of a trittly howl there. I hope your turnout is three quarters half as lovely, won't you? Wouldn't half enjoy. Stay cool, won't you?
There's a lot of Small Faces albums that's come out. Every 6 months, without exaggeration, every 6 months, there's another album, the very best of, you know, the very small, the incredibly small, the minute of Small Faces. And just recently I've seen, I mean, I don't, never mind the fact that they rip us off, they don't pay us a penny out of that. The main thing that upsets me about it is the disclaimers on some of the stuff recently. They've said where the quality on this record is very bad, but then when these recordings were made, the equipment wasn't of the highest quality. This, I mean, we spent time in the studio, and it's a real insult that they say that. The reason they say it is because they've remixed some of the stuff. I mean, there's some stuff out with no lead vocal, or with no bass, or with no guitar, no piano. You know, they've just, and they give it a different title. And it's very bad. Some of it's taken from records, you know, not from tape. And it's because they're ripping us off, they don't feel there's anything, I mean, the fact is we're being ripped off worse because the music is badly represented. It doesn't represent the Small Faces. And I think that's a drag. Of course, I like the money too, but I think that's a drag because that's... The music did sound good when we did it.
Yeah, it did.
And can sound good, but generally doesn't.
Until the reissues started to appear, there was only one more Small Faces release, a single, before Steve left to form Humble Pie. The subsequent split gives the Universal the air of an epitaph. But apart from Steve, could any of them see the end coming when they'd finished Ogden's?
Well, I think we all kind of knew that it was in the back of our minds. As soon as we were all very proud of it when it got released, and we got great acclaim for it, and the press was wonderful, and we were all thinking that, Jesus, how are we going to top this, you know? And I think it scared us a little then, and I think that's what made us turn. It was a turning point for the Small Faces. Instead of sticking together and not bothering about it, and or going off in a completely new direction, we didn't. It's a bit of a sad situation, really, because I believe that if we had overcome that particular problem, we'd have ended up being a big touring band and in the States and God knows what, and I think we'd have still been together today.
Steve, however, has no regrets about leaving when he did, thus ducking the challenge of following Ogden's.
It was the last thing we did, yeah. I think rightly so, because there wasn't a... I don't think there was a long way to go after that. We'd all done our bits of growing up, and it took us a year to do this, and it made perfect sense to knock it on the head after that. I think it was the best thing that could have happened. And I'm sure we wouldn't be here sitting here talking about it like we are now, or anyone that talks about this to me or whatever, if we'd gone on to try and do better it or do something, you know, at least it, because it was the final thing that was done. Everyone said, oh, why did you leave it like that? It's sort of reverse psychology. I'm glad we did. You know, because it was that good and it deserved a bit of attention. You know, it's one of the best things I've ever been involved in.
And what about Ronnie? How does he feel, looking back at the album after all this time?
I can't say I'm particularly that proud of it as a work of art. But I am quite proud of it as it stands now, and you see it now. It is quite an attractive little thing. And it's a time. It's a time that will never be again. And that's that.
Classic Albums was produced by John Pidgeon and co-devised by Roger Scott. I'm Richard Skinner. Our special thanks to Kenny Jones, Ronnie Lane, Steve Marriott and Ian McLagan.
Music. Keris Matthews.
Join me every Sunday morning from 10.
It's going to be quite a ride musically.
Various traditions and cultures. So a little roller coaster, maybe.
Class.
We're going to hear from those who give us words of beauty.
Poetry is the voice of spirit and imagination, and all that is potential, as well as of the healing benevolence that used to be the privilege of the gods.
This morning, I'm joined by best-selling author Philip Pullman, ahead of the highly anticipated BBC One adaptation of his Dark Materials trilogy. Plus, Seed Ensemble's bandleader Cassie Kinoshi stops by for a chat.
Keris Matthews.
The wonderful world of easy Sundays. This morning from 10 on BBC Radio
6 Music.
Morning at 10, Keris Matthews. At 7, Radcliffe and Maconey.
BBC Radio
6 Music.
Right now, it's Chris Hawkins.
Yo, 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 yo.
Old from Remedy. Good morning. Hello. I'm Chris Hawkins and I hope you're having a good weekend. Have you ever wondered, is there a Crystal Palace in Crystal Palace? Well, the band John provide the answer to that and almost